When is the last time you spoke about the impact of climate change on your farm? Well, Longreach grazier Jodie Brown reckons it's not an easy topic to bring up in some parts of the country, but she is hoping by talking about it at Parliament House this week, a national conversation might just kick off and lead to increased support for farmers dealing with changing conditions. Jodie joined Tasmanian farmer Brett Hall and New South Wales farmer Annika Molesworth to discuss why they think dealing with climate change is so important.
So the Longreach area has sort of been in the epicentre of a rather prolonged drought. We're in our seventh year now, and we sort of only had a few good seasons before that. And then leading up to those seasons, we had sort of an 8 to 10 year drought, depending on what property you're on.
I think of the area in central Tasmania where I run my livestock. You've only got to go back 20 years, and that area was only used for summer grazing. And now we run those animals there all the year round. And previously to that, it was just too severe the winters to run stock up there all the year round.
On my family property, we run African sheep and goats, and we're already, you know, about to completely destock the property, and we've been destocking for a number of years now, so having fewer and fewer sheep and goats on the property. You're at the end of the line when you come to African sheep and goats. Like, there is nothing that is more hardy or more drought tolerant, and that's where it is at in far western New South Wales. People have, like, come to the finish line and go, well, what else can we do? Like, how else do you run land out here? And that's why we're seeing people walking off the land and these terrible, you know, mental health epidemics in rural Australia, because, you know, without a clear vision or options or, you know, investment into research of, you know, alternative ways of farming and managing the land, people are being left out there without any idea of what to do and how to cope with these increasingly challenging conditions.
So what are some tangible things that you think the Parliament can be doing to support farmers dealing with climate change?
Agriculture is really uniquely positioned in that we're a contributor to the problem. We know that. We are on the front lines of feeling the impacts of climate change, and we are such an important key part of the solutions.
Here today, hopefully what comes out of this is, from the political point of view, they actually draw the line in the sand and sort of say, okay, let's forget all the discussion and the arguments of the past. We want them to collectively move forward. It's you can't get anything more of more importance from our point of view as an issue.
When you say our point of view, do you think that the majority of the agriculture sector is singing from the same song sheet on this?
I think there's a lot of hot spots, you know, and I think the sooner we connect up those hotspots of enthusiasm and information. So there's already some really exciting things happening with different farmers that have adapted and found new ways not only to just be sustainable but to regenerate the landscape, to make them more resilient to the changing climate, but to also, as Annika was saying, to actually capture some of those economic opportunities that come with that. But if you live in a region where you haven't heard about it, well, then no. And those sort of things can really kind of fast track the conversation and getting on board with climate action.
I think we've got to realise that there's got to be a significant investment in achieving something like carbon neutral 30 for the livestock industry, because we know that a lot of these solutions will take development, and without the investment now, it's putting it further back. It's delaying our response and delaying what we can take out and implement on our farms.
We're business people, and it makes good business sense to act on climate change because our businesses are currently suffering from these increased intensity of extreme weather events. And we know by tapping into new markets that, you know, creates new wealth into our industry, it creates new jobs. And a strong, healthy economy has to be based on a healthy environment.
Annika Molesworth farms near Broken Hill in New South Wales. She was joined there with Tasmanian cattle producer Brett Hall and Jodie Brown from Longreach. Well, regenerative farming hopes to tap into that desire to benefit a farm business and the environment. Proponents think the farming method could provide a competitive edge in emerging export markets where there's demand for healthier produce. If you're unfamiliar with the term, regenerative agriculture is a bit of a hybrid between organic and industrial food production. It tries to balance the natural stewardship of the land with modern farming techniques. Now, its uptake has largely occurred on the fringes of industry, but as John Daly reports, a growing group of Western Australian farmers are hoping to take it to mainstream menus and markets.
Broadacre grain grower Ben Stanich hasn't sprayed fungicide on his crops in 7 years, and insecticides in 2. Instead, he sprays organic fertilisers and trace elements at key stages of plant growth, which is also called foliar feeding.
Yeah, a lot of people are quite surprised. They sort of, you know, don't think it's possible, but it's definitely possible. It's no different from your own health, you know. You eat healthily, healthy foods, you're going to be a healthy person. It's no different from your crop. You give that the right nutrition it needs, and it's going to fight off even insects, fungus, all sorts of different things.
He farms on 10,000 hectares near Pingerup in WA's Great Southern, and he's a large-scale practitioner of regenerative agriculture.
Everyone wants to cut their chemical rates down, but eventually, you know, we sort of want to get to the point where we're not reliant on pre-emergent chemicals. That's a real sort of aim that we're looking for. Not being able to use glyphosate, I think that's a long way off, but never say never.
When people talk about regenerative agriculture, it's usually talking about the environmental, ecological benefits, which are important. But you're running a business. Has this move made sense in terms of productivity and economics?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Since we've sort of started this whole new system, our yields are definitely increasing. So we're looking at, I'd say, around that 30%. But like I say, that's been a combination of foliar feeding and addressing soil issues as well. So, you know, the way I look at it, it's like a 5 or 10 year plan, and it's about adopting different things and sort of going forward from there. You know, obviously you learn from your own mistakes, but you try to reduce the mistakes because it generally costs you money.
Come harvest time, Mr. Stanich puts his grain in the same stockpile and fetches the same price as non-regenerative farmers. But Asian markets they all supply are changing. Trevor Badger is a director on the board of WA's grain cooperative, CBH, and he says grain growers have to adapt.
The vast majority of commercial product is into a very low-value market, and it's a non-discerning customer. They don't have the cash flow to be able to pick and choose. So that's the position we are at the moment, but the emerging middle class in Asia is really changing. So they may not be asking the question today, but they certainly will be tomorrow. There's no future in just growing bog standard grain that is just average. And traditionally, that's what we've done. We need to sharpen our game up and find out exactly what they want, find out exactly what they're prepared to pay for, and deliver that for them.
The global market for grains is pretty cost competitive, which is why Mr. Badger thinks high margin markets are going to be so important.
From my experience in the market, we just have to do it. It's not going to be optional. There's a massive demand out there for organic food, and it's growing at 20% per year. I mean, there are no industries in the world that grow at 20%. So organics is a very, very small segment of agriculture and could never feed the world or even feed half the population. But there's massive demand there with massive growth that leaves a piece in the middle between organics and full industrial agriculture that we could fill, particularly in WA, where we have very, very low chemical usage compared to the rest of the world. We've got a very good climate for growing crops. We can't grow those high-yielding, high-quality crops, but the food we do grow, we use very few chemicals on it. So our natural production system is halfway there anyway.
The export aspirations are shared by another West Australian company, Wide Open Agriculture. It's serving the state's first regenerative branded beef and lamb to high-end restaurants in the southwest of WA.
And then some flamola.
But Managing Director Ben Cole wants regenerative food production to go from industry niche to an industry norm.
That is, I would say, the trend in food right now, is understanding where it came from, how it was farmed and its impact both on the farming and community and the farmer, but also on the land that it's grown in, the soil health, but also the biodiversity around the farm and the water quality that's coming off that farm. I think it is the future of food production and food consumption. And why I say that is because I think it offers answers both for a lot of serious environmental challenges around accelerating climate change, but also it's healthier food. And there's a huge global awareness now on what you eat having an impact on your health. So I really do see us all eating regenerative food as we go forward.
The production method still, of course, has its skeptics among conventional farmers Angela Patterson is a research scientist for the University of Sydney's Institute of Agriculture. She says the main barrier is profits.
There are some barriers to the adoption of regenerative practices. The main one being they do tend to yield less than industrial practices. So the less interference we have, usually the less yield we'll get, particularly in the good season. But because the practice is more sustainable, if the consumers are interested in paying just a little bit more for their food, then farmers, of course, will produce the food knowing that they'll be able to get a slightly higher price for their product at the end. To bring regenerative practices into more mainstream, it needs to be an approach that includes farmers and the marketing chain and the final consumer all working together to understand the issues. So it's a bit of a chicken or an egg question. If the consumer's ready to purchase it and the processor's ready to use it, the farmers will produce it.
Sam Lehman runs about 4,500 lamb and ewes on his property near Cranbrook in WA's Great Southern, and he was, until recently, a conventional farmer. But that changed after wind erosion damaged his farm pretty badly 2 years ago.
We felt like we had to change something. There must be a better way of running livestock and still being able to look after your soil. So, yeah, we sort of thought, righto, let's get the cover on here and try and keep it. The chemical costs have definitely come down. Inputs in terms of seed, we're spending more on what we're putting in the ground, but we're seeing a return in terms of what our stocking rates are.
You're currently lambing at the moment. What kind of changes have you been seeing?
Yeah, so we've lifted our lambing, our stocking rate for lambing, by at least 25%, and that's given us flexibility through the farm. If you said you were going to lamb at 8 to 10 ewes to the hectare, well, you'd say you won't have much cover left on your paddock. But the system that we're going with, confinement feeding and setting up paddocks early, yeah, it seems to be a game changer for us.
Were people sceptical when you first started to take a look at these kinds of things?
Yeah, for sure, because it's different. Not everyone sort of likes to see change or see different things going on, but we've stuck with our guns and we've had some failures as well, but we learn from that, and yeah, hopefully we're working out a more robust system. Even though we might have spent more in terms of grain or seed that we're putting in the ground, by lifting our stocking rates, there's a huge upside. At the end of the year, we'll crunch the numbers, but I know it's going to look pretty good.
WA livestock producer Sam Lehman ending that report from John Daly.